Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Thanks to Canadian band Mr. Something Something from Toronto and the Afrobeat poet Ikwunga for our theme song, You Are Beautiful. My name's Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm joined by my co-host Mona Hill.
Hello, everybody.
And before we go any further, I have a little bit of important business to do here, and that is to tell you all about the CJTR annual music garage sale, and that is coming up on June the 4th, and we're getting ready for it, and we're looking for your donations. If you've got CDs, DVDs, working stereo equipment, sheet music, or other music-related items that you no longer want or need, please consider donating them to your community radio station. You can drop your items by the station at 1102 8th Avenue during our business hours, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, or give us a call at 525-7274 and arrange for pickup. Our annual music garage sale is a major fundraiser for Regina Community Radio, and your support is greatly appreciated. It will be held on the main floor here at 1102 8th Avenue on Saturday, June 4th, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and get here early and get the goodbyes.
Wonderful.
You never know what you're going to find.
I can't wait.
We've been there.
We have, and we've bought music.
And I think I'm going to be working all that day.
So awesome.
I'll be able to talk to people, and they can greet me, and I'll greet them. And
come on in and meet Jim.
Yeah. Anyway, let's carry on with the show. This week, we're talking about the struggle of people of the Baha'i faith living in Iran. Our guests are Dr. Dinesh Singh and Farzad Merghani, who are both past citizens of Iran and are now living in Regina. Welcome to you both.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Good to have you here. Yes, today we're talking with Farzad Merghani, who, I'll give you a little bit of bio here, at the age of 18 left Iran and stayed in Turkey for about 11 months. And then you immigrated to Canada in 1985. You've been here quite a while.
Yes, more than my native land, I guess.
You are an electrical engineer, and you have a wife who is originally from the Philippines and two beautiful daughters, I would imagine.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you were born in 1966, and you were born into a Baha'i family.
That's correct,
yes.
Who already
practiced the faith. And for those of you who don't know, who are listening to the show, there are currently seven Baha'i leaders who are in prison in Iran, and Farzad is the cousin of one of those people. And our other guest is Dinesh Singh. Welcome, Dinesh.
Well, thank you very much.
He's a postdoctoral researcher in theoretical physics and part-time sessional lecturer in the Department of Physics at the University of Regina. We have some of the most interesting people on this show. He specializes in the study of gravitation based on Albert Einstein's theory of general relativity, with interests in black holes, neutron stars, and other astrophysical phenomena, as well as applications to gravitational waves and theoretical cosmology. Basically, the study of the universe.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
Absolutely fascinating.
It's a bit of a mouthful, I think.
It is, and that's probably why I like doing this, because I love words. So I like the way they roll off my tongue. And you have been a member of the Baha'i Faith since 1994. So
that's
you
correct.
Came into it later in life rather than being born into it.
Yes, and I actually need to make a slight correction in the introduction. I'm actually not from Iran.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm Canadian-born.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's quite all right.
I don't know why I thought that.
Yeah, but I became a Baha'i in 1994 when I was an undergrad at Queen's University. I was doing my undergraduate degree in theoretical physics, and, it's a kind of a long story how I became a Baha'i, but I learned about it when I was on campus as an undergraduate student and found it very attractive, and I eventually became a Baha'i in my final year at university, and then history continues after that.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about that. I wanted to talk about a bit of the history of the Baha'i faith, where its roots, what's attractive in that faith to you both, and the fact that one of you was born into it. You know, sometimes that's just sort of, we end up with many different faiths and, you know, religions where people are born into it and they may not necessarily be adherents to it, but they consider themselves to be. Mm-hmm. And then those who take that step as adults to move somewhere different in their life, in a religion or a spirituality. So let's talk about that. Go ahead.
Well, Baha'i faith started in the year 1844 in Iran. Persia at the time was called, or Iran, basically it's got many many different facets to discuss. And just to make a clarification, even though we are born into any religion, one of the principles of Baha'i faith is called independent investigation of the truth. So every person, every Baha'i is considered a Baha'i child until he makes a conscious decision to be considered as a Baha'i adult when they reach the age of 15, and then I guess to participate in Baha'i activities. So for all of us, we were attending from childhood the classes, educated, we call them Baha'i classes, or kind of like Sunday schools.
Right.
And it's always was involved studying about all different religions in the world, all the major religions in the world. It was never only Baha'i faith. Baha'i faith basically believes in one creator, one maker, one God, whatever people name it. And we believe that people are the only creatures in the world that can recognize the greater existence of God. Now, we can't really relate to it. The example used is a table to a carpenter, that the table was built by a carpenter, but table has no consciousness to be able to recognize the creator, its creator. So we believe in manifestations of God, people that have come and told us about the creator, and these are different great teachers or manifestations. Sometimes they're even their followers believe them to be God, like Abraham, Moses, Jesus, Muhammad, Krishna, Buddha, and to different peoples at different time. And we believe that Baha'i faith and Baha'u'llah was also one of these manifestations that came and brought the principles that were more applicable to today's issues and situations in the world.
That's interesting, because the majority of faiths that I know of are very ancient, you know. So that's interesting that it would focus more on modern tradition more.
Well, I'd like to maybe add a couple of things to
this.
Sure,
that'd be great.
The way that I understand the nature of the Baha'i faith is that it's a continuation of religious experience or religious connection with God, mm-hmm. so that God is revealed to humankind throughout the ages, and that Baha'u'llah, being the glory of God, the messenger of the Baha'i faith, is only the latest of a continuing line of messengers to follow. So where one might see a distinction between the Baha'i faith and other religions is that we don't believe in the concept of finality of religious revelation, that it'll be ever continuing.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I mean, this is quite significant, because if you accept that the nature of God is, as Baha'is can understand it, the unknowable essence, that God is so much beyond human beings that his knowledge is infinite compared to us as finite mm-hmm. beings. Mm-hmm. And so there will always be need for humankind to be educated progressively.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where we have our perspective on this.
And what is the problem that the government of Iran has with this?
There's a lot of principles that the Baha'i faith I guess the biggest problem is the concept of finality that the Muslim religion or clergy preach to some, that this is the final religion. Islam was the final, the book came, everything that everybody needs to know is there, and there's no need for anybody. If anybody else comes, it's a liar.
Okay.
Says that he's from God, or anybody that comes and says I'm a new religion, you're a liar, it's a false religion. And the concept we think of it is like children growing up, and humanity has been growing. If you compare the issues of humanity or the comprehension and the train of thought of what was acceptable and the growth that we have had and the civilizations in 2000 or 4000 or 5000 years ago compared to today, you can't. I guess we were not there, but I can see that we are continuously striving to improve the world and growing up, more and more growing up, more and more maturing, more and more caring about each other. And you kind of expect that the teachings that are coming for the people and guidances, directions are ever advancing. So one of the major problems are by the clergy, some of the clergy, I guess, in Iran, is that this idea threatens their grip and control that they have on people to think about a new religion.
Okay.
Also, another principle, as I mentioned earlier, the independent investigation of the truth. That's again not the thing that the clergy likes, because a lot of clergy like to tell people how to live their lives and what's right and what's wrong. Yeah. But as the Baha'i faith does not have clergy, does not have any interpreter. Books are there. You read them. You interpret it for themselves and live your lives. So we have Baha'i administrations, but we don't have any professional Baha'i jobs or any Baha'i leaders.
Yeah, Baha'u'llah had abolished the institution of the clergy for this day and age because he proclaimed that we are at a stage of maturity in humanity collectively that we should be advocating for universal education. So if you think about religious history, there would always be an intermediate class of people known as the clergy who would be literate and who would be able to minister to the people that they parish into. So this was a necessary institution for ancient times when most people did not have the capacity to read and write and to investigate truth for themselves. We're at a stage now where we have advanced scientifically, economically, socially, and so forth, that we no longer need that intermediate human institution to understand what the writings of the Baha'i faith or any other religion mean to us. So one of the principles of the Baha'i faith is the advocacy of universal education for all people. And part of the motivation for that is so that we can come to our own understandings of things.
It puts personal control into the picture.
Indeed, yes.
Yes,
personal control, personal accountability.
Right.
There's several other principles, yeah. like equality of man and woman is the concept that's enshrined in the Baha'i faith at 1844 when it came to Iran, which was the most, at the time, most backward place as far as treatment of women. Came and said the men and women are equal, talked about the equality of races, that in the eyes of God, all the races are the same, and as I mentioned, all the religions, so unity of all the religions, so discriminations and prejudices based on religion and race should be all abolished, according to him. So a lot of things that were newer and not necessarily were liked by the clergy at the time, and the Baha'is were severely at the time persecuted. Over 20,000 people were put to death at its inception, and there was this hatred of the Baha'i faith that was educated by some of the clergy into the people that this is number one duty for all the people that they have to adhere and to protect the cause of God from this movement that preaches these things. Baha'u'llah says that if two people are arguing about a religion, they're both wrong, because their religion is for unity, is the main reason for it is uniting. So we were never into business of arguing or anything. Mm-hmm. In fact, we may sort of been leading in the wrong, starting on the wrong foot. I mean, we didn't mean to, by any chance, to speak ill of Islam, and I hope that's not intended. In fact, in Iran, the biggest support we get is the majority of the Iranians are Muslim, and the biggest support that we get from the grassroots and the people in Iran are from the Muslims, of course, and throughout the times, a lot of times they stood up and tried to protect the Baha'is, people that are an independent thinker and the fair-minded Muslims. There are websites called, there's a website, one the particular called the Muslims in Defense of Baha'is in the internet, that there are some independent Muslims that say, well, what's happening to the Baha'is is wrong. Yeah. In fact, there was an open letter that was written by some non-Baha'i thinkers of Iran. If you don't mind, we're going to read that.
That would be fine.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sure.
This whole thing sounds more like power and control than it has anything to do with religion.
Most religious conflicts are of that nature, aren't they?
It's not about the religion.
Think about Northern Ireland, for example. Yeah. It has nothing to do with different branches of Christianity. It's to do with control over land, control over governance, and so forth.
It's a common thread throughout history.
Unfortunately, religion has been used as the front for control, basically control and telling people what's right.
Yeah. Go ahead and
sure.
Go ahead. Now.
Yeah. So as far as I've noted, this is an open letter written by academics, intellectuals, journalists, and other people of prominence from Iran who are not Baha'is, who are speaking. Deploring the treatment of Baha'is in their country that they've noticed over several decades. So this is dated February 4th, 2009. An open letter from a group of academics, writers, artists, journalists, and Iranian activists throughout the world to the Baha'i community. In the name of goodness and beauty, and in the name of humanity and liberty, as Iranian human beings, we are ashamed for what has been perpetrated upon the Baha'is in the last century and a half in Iran. We firmly believe that every Iranian, without distinction of any kind, such as race, color, sex, language, religion, politics, or other opinions, and also without regard to ethnic background, social origin, property, birth, or other status, he is entitled to all the rights and freedoms set forth in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. However, from the very inception of the Baha'i faith, the follower of this religion in Iran has been deprived of many provisions of human rights solely on account of their religious convictions. According to historical documents and evidence, from the commencement of the Babi movement, followed by the appearance of the Baha'i faith, thousands of our countrymen have been slain by this sort of bigotry and superstition only for their religious beliefs. Just in the first decades of its establishment, some 20,000 of those who stood identified with this faith community were savagely killed throughout various regions of Iran. We are ashamed that during that period, no voice of protest against these barbaric murders were registered. We are ashamed that until today, the voice of protest against these heinous crimes has been infrequent and muted. We are ashamed that in addition to the intense suppression of Baha'is during its formative decades, the last century also witnessed periodic episodes of persecution of this group of our countrymen, in which their homes and businesses were set on fire, and their lives, property, and families were subjected to brutal persecution. But all the while, the intellectual community of Iran remains silent. We are ashamed that during the last 30 years, the killing of Baha'is solely on the basis of their religious beliefs has gained legal status, and over 200 Baha'is have been slain on this account. We are ashamed that a group of intellectuals have justified coercion against the Baha'i community of Iran. We are ashamed of our silence that after many decades of service to Iran, Baha'i retired persons have been deprived of their right to a pension. We are ashamed of our silence that on the account of their fidelity to their religion and truthfulness in stating this conviction, thousands of Baha'i youth have been barred from education in universities and other institutions of higher learning in Iran. We are ashamed that because of their parents' religious beliefs, Baha'i children are subjugated to denigration in schools and in public. We are ashamed of our silence over this painful reality that our nation, Baha'is, are systematically oppressed and maligned. A number of them are incarcerated because of their religious convictions. Their homes and places of business are attacked and destroyed, and periodically their brutal burial places are desecrated. We are ashamed of our silence when confronted with the long, dark, and atrocious record that our laws and legal system have marginalized and deprived Baha'is of their rights, and the injustice and harassment of both official and unofficial organs of the government towards this group of our countrymen. We are ashamed for all these transgressions and injustices, and we are ashamed for our silence over these deeds. We, the undersigned, ask you, the Baha'is, to forgive us for the wrongs committed against the Baha'i community of Iran. We will no longer be silent when injustice is visited upon you. We stand by you in achieving all the rights enshrined in the Universal Declaration of the Human Rights. Let us join hands in replacing hatred and ignorance with love and tolerance.
And that letter was dictated from? Where did it come from?
I don't know. Where did it come from?
This has been on the internet. It's okay. A group of, there's a large number of people that's signed it.
From Iran, that live
yes,
in Iran.
Yes, from people citizens. Of Iran. Some are outside the country and some within the country.
Of the Muslim faith?
They're mostly Muslim. None of them are Baha'is. Yeah, majority
this
Muslims.
This reminds me of the Palestinian-Israeli issue where you have many, many Israelis who are feeling exactly the same way. It's not much different. And it's nice to see that because for people to come together to support those who are being oppressed is so important.
Indeed. I think it reminds me of our common humanity.
Yes.
This is what the Baha'i faith stands for, that we are one people mm-hmm. in reality. You can see that on a biological ground, we can see it on a social ground, whatever. The point is that pretty much everybody really wants the same things in life. They want to make sure that they have a comfortable life, education for their children, protection from harms that could come to them and so forth. And so I think these individuals who wrote this letter are realizing this commonality that they have with Baha'is who are being persecuted for no justifiable reason other than the fact that they believe in a certain way.
And Amnesty International has pointed this out very, very strongly as well over the years. And last year made a point of talking about the contempt that the government of Iran has shown for human rights mm-hmm. By rejecting a number of UN recommendations. And one of them was the fact that the delegation to the UN from Iran accepted the recommendation to respect freedom of religion, but at the same time rejected a recommendation to end discrimination against people of the Baha'i faith. Very contradictory. They in total accepted 123 recommendations, reserved its position on 20 other, and rejected 45. Amnesty International is definitely perplexed by the numerous contradictions between recommendations accepted and those rejected. It doesn't seem to make any sense at all. So it's a very sad state of affairs. What do we have left, Jim? A couple minutes?
Yes.
Okay. One of the things I wanted to talk about, since you talked about this letter being written on behalf of people mostly of the Muslim faith in support of the Baha'i people, one of the things that Amnesty recognizes and other human rights organizations is that oftentimes activists are also targets of violence. Is this something that you would be maybe aware of, that those people would maybe be having to be worried about if they show their support? Is this something that...
I think it's definitely a very risky mm-hmm. movement and very brave on people that actually put their signatures in there for doing that. I mean, as you mentioned, the people that do human rights activity in Iran, like the one... Nobel Peace Prize laureate, the only one that came from Iran, Shirin Ebadi, is right now not living in the country, and it's not safe for her to be back to the country. So people that try to protect the human rights do face some risks.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what about outside of the country? Has that been an issue at all that you know of? Say for instance, living in Canada, we got about 30 seconds left, but have you understood that there has been any issues?
Well, I have some academic colleagues who are of Iranian background, mm-hmm. and who are quite sympathetic to the situation mm-hmm. of the Baha'i faith. That said, they're also very nervous about vocalizing their
sympathies.
Their concerns, because of the nature of how reprisals come about.
Yeah, that it's so sad, isn't it?
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for being with us for this half. We'll come back and we'll take a break and we'll listen to some commercials. Jim has some announcements and we'll have some Baha'i music to listen to, and then we'll come back and continue the conversation.
Okay, that was it's entitled Aini Baha'i, and I have no idea what it, you have a clue? No. Okay, fine. But it's from Persia, Iran, and it was Baha'i music. Before we carry on here, I just want to do one more important thing for CJTR, and we have to talk about the Look and Listen Lottery. Now, this is very important to the Regina Community Radio. It's the CJTR Look and Listen Lottery, in which you could win a complete audio-video makeover for your home. and it consists of the grand prize, a 58-inch Panasonic 3D plasma TV with a home theater receiver, 3D Blu-ray player, a complete surround sound speaker package, theater seating for three, stands for the TV and speaker, and they will install it for you. So a retail value of over $10,000. The second prize of a 50-inch Panasonic plasma TV, and that's valued at $1,100. Third prize is a Monster Beats by Dr. Dre iPod dock slash boombox with a retail value of $550. And the draw date is Friday, June 17th. So that doesn't give you too much time left to buy a ticket. I happen to have tickets on me. If you see me and you want a ticket, ask me and I'll gladly sell you a ticket or two or three. And they're just $20 each. Only 1,000 tickets will be sold. If you want more, if you want tickets and you don't see me, you can go to our website at www.cjtr.ca. You can call the station during business hours like now, 525-7274, or you can email us at lookandlistenlottery@cjtr.ca. Prizes are furnished by Radio Center Consumer Electronics. Thank you very much. And so this is your opportunity to support Regina Community Radio, and we encourage you to get your tickets now for the Look and Listen Lottery.
Well, sounds great.
It is.
Yeah. Welcome back to Human Rights Radio on CJTR. I'm Mona Hill, and I'm here with my co-host Jim Hutchings. We're here with two wonderful guests. One is Farzad Maragani, and the other one is Dinesh Singh, who are members of the Baha'i Faith, and they live here in Regina. We are talking on this show about the oppression that's happening in Iran, the imprisonment of people of the Baha'i Faith. There have been thousands of people murdered over, I'm not sure how many years, since the inception of
the Baha'i Faith.
Yes. Yeah.
160.
Yeah, and we're talking about that. You know, what's going on? What are the reasons behind it? And the outcomes and who is suffering because of it. So I'd like to turn it back over to you. But I first have an announcement to make myself, and this is an amnesty announcement. And it's there's two of them, actually. One of them is regarding the recent anti-homosexuality bill that is coming out of Uganda. And it's very shocking that the Ugandan parliament has rejected the anti-homosexuality bill that has been the subject of public hearings in recent days before the Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Committee. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch were saying the parliamentary order paper of the 10th of May indicates that the bill could be debated by the parliament and come up for a vote on May 11th, which was yesterday. And this bill would introduce the death penalty as a sanction for some consensual sex between members of the same sex, the same penalty provided for terrorism and treason. It would be an offense for a person who is aware of any violations of the bill's provisions not to report them to the relevant authorities within 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. I mean, it could be reflecting upon activists as well, that if you know of this and you don't report it, family members, people you work with, this is so wide-reaching. The bill would also criminalize the promotion of homosexuality, which would jeopardize the legitimate work of national and international activists and organizations working to defend and promote human rights in Uganda. One clause would require Uganda, a member of the UN Human Rights Council, to withdraw from all international legal instruments that contradict the provisions of the bill. As the bill is inconsistent with the right of non-discrimination, among others, this would in effect mean that Uganda should withdraw from all human rights treaties, the group said. It is deeply alarming that the Ugandan parliament is again considering this appalling bill, which flies in the face of human decency and violates international human rights laws, said Michelle Kagari, Amnesty International's Deputy Director for Africa. That's my first announcement. My second one was released on May 10th through Amnesty that El Salvador has been urged to protect journalists after death threats. This is a commonality all over the world, isn't it? The authorities in El Salvador must take immediate action to protect journalists who fear for their lives after receiving a series of death threats. From April 30th to May 4th, staff members at Radio Victoria, a community radio station committed to social and human rights, reporting in Cabanas region, northeast of the capital of San Salvador, told Amnesty International they received repeated death threats claiming to come from a death squad. So this is Human Rights Radio. in El Salvador, and there are death threats because they have a human rights radio show. And I think that's really important. Let's get back to Iran and the Baha'is and talk with Dinesh and Farzad. Take it away.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to talk a little bit about the letter that Dinesh read, I mean, the intention for us reading the letter here by no means was to put a blame or be happy about the shame or show the shame. I mean, I don't think the people that are signatories to that document should feel ashamed. But it was read to show the level of humanity and compassion of the people that wrote it. And as you mentioned, throughout the history, anywhere when there were acts of genocide or acts of human rights abuse, there were brave people that sort of stood up and said that's wrong and
Absolutely. That's
mm-hmm. unfair and that's unjust and it's and Iran is no exception, and there are people like that stand up once in a while and say that's unfair or that's not true what's going on.
Right, another part of basic human behavior.
Indeed.
Thankfully.
Yes.
We mentioned about the Baha'i faith not having clergy, and in place of it, what it has is administrations, and these are basically people that are elected to look after the affairs of the community for the duration of their election, which in most of the world is a 1-year term. We call them local assemblies or national assemblies. And these are just regular people that people vote for them without campaigning through private balloting. And once they've been appointed, they basically sit down and look after the affairs of the community, plans and the center and the repairs and maintenance of their centers and buildings and weddings and children classes and divorces and mm-hmm. burials, and if there are any disputes between the members that they come and they want to resolve it and things like that. In Iran, of course, the government, when the revolution happened in 1970s, basically announced that the Baha'i faith organizations are all illegal. So all the assemblies, one of the concepts of Baha'i faith is being obedient to the country that you're living or to the local system. Based on that, they shut down all the assemblies. And for several years, there was absolutely no directions or leadership for the Baha'i faith, which is the largest minority in the Iran. And in the last several years, the government allowed a small group of appointed people to be the leaders, and all of these people, the seven that we refer to them as Yaran or friends of Iran, mm-hmm. or ordinary people that had lives outside, they had their own businesses or life.
Livelihoods, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, they were basically looking after the affairs of this community of the 300,000 members, and mostly burials. Performing the wedding ceremonies and resolving any disputes that would come between them. And they actually had done that, introducing themselves and with the knowledge of the government. But 3 years ago, the government basically raided the homes of these people early in the morning, and all of these seven people have been in prison since then. And one of them happened to be my cousin, Afif Naimi. So first 2 years, they were in prison. For the first few months, there were absolutely no signs and nobody knew where they are. Took over 2 years before they were saw any legal system. And their lawyer was the Nobel Peace Prize laureate, Shirin Ebadi, was their lawyer, human rights activist in Iran, representing them. And she basically said that there is absolutely nothing in their file. When their file was presented to them, there's absolutely nothing. There was a long list of things that they were accused of, but really the common thing that they only had, what they all had, was they were appointed to be the leading the community, basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the concept of get rid of the community leaders, you may get rid of the rest of them, is that what you think is going on?
Well, from what I understand, this has been this one aspect of a very systematic strategy on the part of the government to eliminate the Baha'i faith in its capacity to exist.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, in that letter that I had read, university students had been denied university education. So, so it's understood that when a high school student wants to apply for university, he or she has to write the entrance exam, which is reasonable. They also have to state their religious affiliation. Mm-hmm. And Baha'is in good conscience would state that they're Baha'is, and they're automatically eliminated from consideration irrespective of their abilities to meet the requirements for education. And so as a consequence of this, the Baha'i community had created an underground educational institution, basically faculty who were from who were Baha'is who were expelled from university formed the educational base for the young people to get accredited classes in whatever it is
different
subject matter, but specifically not of a religious or political nature. It'd be something like pharmacy or engineering or English literature or something like that.
Okay. And I mean, I can see this when you use the term underground, definitely being underground.
It's like homeschooling. Like here we hear about homeschooling, but that was home university. Basically.
Yeah, that's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Now, so let's take that a step further. So a student comes out after, say, his 4 years in pharmacy, wants to immigrate because there's a job opportunity in Canada. How does the Canadian government view this education? How do they view the problems of the Baha'i being persecuted and immigration?
I think they're very sympathetic.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, with regard to the seven Iranian leaders who were imprisoned, Minister Lawrence Cannon, or outgoing Minister of Foreign Affairs Lawrence Cannon, had issued statements in support of the Baha'is. All the MPs in Canada, including the four MPs in Regina, have been very supportive of the Baha'is, and we appreciate their support immensely, because mm-hmm. This is going to be an ongoing situation before it ends.
Mm-hmm.
We are reliant upon governments, other institutions like the United Nations, human rights organizations and such to voice their concerns about this. And most recently, UK Prime Minister Cannon, I believe, is it? Let me find it. Excuse me a moment. David Cameron, sorry. he has expressed his concern about the quote, ongoing plight of the seven Baha'i leaders and the continued attacks on the Baha'i faith in Iran. So governments are fully aware of what's going on, mm-hmm. And to some extent individuals are aware, but having opportunities like this to speak on this to reach as many audience members as possible is very important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Farzad, have you heard any news of your cousin?
All I know that he's in prison. His family visits him once in a while. But what happened was originally when they basically finally after over 2 years they did have a show show court, I guess, show style court, very brief. They were all sentenced to 20 years imprisonment, and which right away brought an outcry, international outcry. As Dinesh said, a lot of people, including Prime Minister Stephen Harper and Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, the leaders of the European Union, in the United States, and including Amnesty International, basically the human rights organizations, they all basically opposed that, and they shortly came back and said there was an appeal and their sentence was reduced to 6 months. To 10 years, reduced by half to 10 years. And this was only verbally communicated to their lawyers that their sentence from 20 years
so
had been reduced
to 10.
Yeah.
Nope.
And 6 months later, just recently, when they were questioned, the reporters were questioning the ministers in Iran, they said, no, there's no such things.
Oh, my
their
goodness.
Sentences is 20 years, and there were the prosecutors that... complained about the reduction and said that the reduction does not meet the Sharia laws. So based on Sharia laws, you can't do that. So one thing, if I may take a sidestep from this, earlier I mentioned that Baha'u'llah said that the purpose of religion is unity, and if two people are arguing, they're both wrong about it. Baha'u'llah actually took that one step farther and told the Baha'is that they are not allowed to ever get into any kind of a physical confrontations, or in fact, he barred self-defense to Baha'is. So if Baha'is are attacked for the purpose of their religion, they cannot raise an arm to defend themselves. And the only defense that, so the Baha'is are in Iran even referred to as sheep, basically defenseless, that they go to slaughter. And the only defense that they have is by support they get. They are non-political. So in any conflict that you see throughout the world, it's been some people that opposed each other or stand up and protested something. Baha'is are, again, not allowed to protest. So you would never seen the 300,000 Baha'is in Iran gather together and throw rocks at something or hold signs and saying we protest that this is happening to us. It's been completely, the only defense they have is speaking, true speaking, and that's been taken away from them in Iran. So we feel the rest of the world amazingly has taken this cause very seriously. And I always like to refer to it as a genocide that just about to happen and didn't really happen, because the government, the people that are in ruling the country really wish they could basically eliminate the Baha'i faith. Because of all the attention they get, it's like a yo-yo going back and forth, that we are getting a lot of support and we are really thankful. And this is the extent of our expression is to speak out and say, well, what is happening is wrong.
Yeah.
In fact, we are not even arguing with them that who's right, like what religion. We're going to say, like, we're not in that. If you think that's you going to heaven and that's the true way, that's fine. And even if you think we're all going to hell, that's fine. I mean, it's okay. It's not if you tell us not to tell anybody, fine. If you tell us not to convert anybody to Baha'i faith, that's fine. But unfortunately, the seed of hate has been sown in these countries, and a lot of people blindly following that.
When you stated countries, this is something we talked about a bit before the show, was that it's not only happening in Iran. There is oppression of Baha'i people in other countries as well, is there?
That's certainly true, yes. One example would be Egypt, which has now gone through a transformation
Absolutely.
Of its own.
Yeah.
And so the Baha'i community is hopeful that within this transformation of Egyptian society as a whole, that their rights as human beings will be protected.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting situation, considering that a number of these Middle Eastern countries are going through a type of revolutionary change, of which the Baha'is are not involved at all. We're, as Farzad quite rightly said, we're forbidden to interfere in any of this. We're to respect the governments that are duly elected or happen to be. And so Baha'is will not be involved in any of these sort of things. But my personal feeling is that the communities will be relied upon in the course of time as their countrymen are going through this transitionary period, to look upon the Baha'i community in the way that it has conducted itself in the face of oppression, and may look to the Baha'is for guidance on how to navigate through uncharted waters of this sort.
Well, that's a very interesting perspective. And I was going to state that I think that I had heard maybe a year ago or so that there's a Baha'i community, a small one in Israel, that has the protection of the Israeli government.
Well, actually, we need to clarify something about this, and there's an historical reason for this.
Mm-hmm.
When Baha'u'llah and his family were exiled ultimately to what we call Israel, Baha'u'llah made a promise to the head of the Ottoman Empire of the day that he would promise not to try to teach the Baha'i faith to the people who live in this locality. And so that sort of agreement has been honored and carried through to today. So the fact is that in Israel, we do not have a Baha'i community as such. What we have are people from all over the world who come to the World Center in Haifa, Israel, to serve for any number of years. But the Baha'i faith is not taught in Israel. People certainly know about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's evident from going to Haifa and to Akka, where the shrines of the Bab and Baha'u'llah are located. They are considered World Heritage Sites and so forth. So,
there is a modicum of respect.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, and that's good to hear. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Do you have any parting words?
Thanks for having us. I think... And giving us our opportunity, and actually thank you for what you are doing two of you basically promoting human rights and looking at issues that a lot of people sort of brush off at not my problem or not my responsibility, and sort of caring. I guess that's what I like to say to everybody that has supported Baha'i Faith and anybody else that is that is being persecuted throughout the world.
I'd also like to express my thanks to your radio program for inviting us to be part of this. If I may make a suggestion for any individuals who want to do something about this, I would encourage them to write to their members of parliament. As I mentioned before, all four members of parliament, Ralph Goodale, Tom Lukiewski, Ray Bowen, and Andrew Scheer, have been very supportive of the Baha'is.
That's
and
great.
So... having a letter written on, you know, to them about the situation helps further this process.
Sure, it helps educate them and keep it in the media as well.
Indeed.
Right? Keep it present, yes. Well, it's our pleasure. It's absolutely our pleasure to have you here and to talk about this issue. And you can also go to the Amnesty International Canada website or any Amnesty International website and find out about what's happening. And I'm sure that you'll find some petitions online. And any opportunity you have to sign petitions, in my opinion, are great opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Farzad Amerigani and Dinesh Singh, for joining us on Human Rights Radio. I'm going to turn it back over to you, Jim, because I know you have a real quick announcement to make.
No, I had covered all that stuff.
Oh, I thought you had another one.
No.
Oh, just one? Okay,
no.
What have we got left here?
Not very much,
okay.
But I can actually, what I can do is go through the full closing.
Okay, go for
because
it.
Because usually I abbreviate it because we're you know, searching for time. As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. We're volunteers with Amnesty International, and our goal is to increase the awareness of and contribute to a discussion of human rights issues at home and around the world. To discover how you can contribute to the abolition of human rights violations, visit our website at amnestysaskatchewan.ca or check out our Facebook group at Amnesty International Saskatchewan and follow the links. For info on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to cjtr.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."